Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for being here today, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner, and I'm very excited for you guys to hear from our very first guest today, Laura Thweet. She was born and raised in Durango, Colorado. She was a runner-up at state in cross country for the state of Colorado. She went on to become a U.S. cross champion and member of Team USA for World Cross in 2015, which were held in China. She's a 225 marathoner and former CU athlete. She's a fifth place finisher in the 10K at the 2016 track and field Olympic trials and a fifth place finisher at the 2020 U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. She's also a four-time major marathon elite runner and a pro runner for Saucony. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, Laura. Welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Hey, Mads. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. What an honor.
You are the first guest interview of the Fueling Forward podcast. How does it feel?
Like I said, I'm so honored. I feel some pressure. You know, we really pick this thing off, right? But no, I'm so excited when you came to me and told me that you really wanted to get this off the ground. I definitely feel like there's a need for something like this, and it's important to create space on these issues. So I'm happy to be here. I can't wait.
Me either. And we have a really fun relationship because we've been different levels of like friends and teammates and co-coaches throughout a really long time in this sport. So Laura helped me train to walk onto the CU team back in 2012. Then we were teammates post-collegiately, and then we were co-coaches for the last six seasons at Monarch High School. So yeah, we've had a lot of different avenues in the sport, and we've had a lot of opportunities for conversations like this, which is really cool. And I think you have such a great insight to this stuff and a great experience to share with everybody. So I think this is going to be a really fun episode.
Yeah, no, again, I'm excited. And we've had such a journey together, like you just mentioned, in so many different areas, all within the sport. And then I've definitely leaned on you as a dietitian. And you've definitely played a role in that part of my life as well, which has been really helpful. So yeah, it's cool to be here with you doing another thing. Another thing together. Here we are.
Another thing. Now podcast buddies. I love it.
I know. What's next? Who knows?
What's next?
We're doing it all.
Well, I'd love to start with having you just tell us about Laura Thweet as a runner. How did you get into the sport? What did your introduction to running look like?
Yeah, I think similarly to a lot of people, I didn't like jump into running right away. It's something that kind of found me. I tried my hand at a bunch of different sports growing up. I played volleyball, I tried soccer, I tried tennis, I did horseback riding for a while and competed in that. Like, sports for me was always very social, and that's kind of how I got into athletics, is because my friends were doing it. And so I had aspirations of becoming a great Olympic volleyball player. And I played in middle school when it's not really a cut sport, so like everyone kind of gets that chance. And then I went on to high school and did not make the team. And it turned out I did not have that skill set. And so I was kind of like, well, I really enjoy athletics, and sports has been really fun for me, like the little bit I've kind of dabbled in. And so I had a couple friends at the time who were big Nordic skiers, and they were going out for cross country our freshman year to get in shape for Nordic. And I had no idea what cross country was, because my middle school had a track program, which I dabbled in and decided that I hated track. And I was like, running's like not for me. And they were like, well, cross country is different. You're not on a track. It's like the races are like 3 miles. Everyone gets to compete. Everyone gets to travel. Like, it could be like a fun thing to do. Like, we're all doing it. So I was like, great, I will try out for this thing called cross country. So I went out for the team, pretty immediately found a love for it. And I think part of that was I was good at it. And it was like the first sport that I really kind of started to find success at. And because I was kind of finding that success, like with it came this newfound confidence that I hadn't really had before. And it was just so much fun, just like being out there with my friends. Again, like the environment is really fun. It's a co-ed sport. So you're out there with like, it's girls and guys, you're all training for the same thing, you're all doing the same thing. And there was just this really cool camaraderie, and it was just I just had a blast with it. And like the seniors my freshman year were so great and like inclusive. And I just felt like I immediately had like, 30 new friends. And it was just such a great way for me to transition into high school. That's kind of how I got into running was it was kind of by accident in a way where I like didn't really know too much about it. Like my parents ran here and there. But it was just something that I had never really been interested in. And then I kind of stumbled into it because it was a great opportunity for someone like me to kind of continue to be involved in sports. And then it just grew from there.
I think it's so funny how many of us runners have that intro to running where we initially hated it and
You're like,
had
no.
resistance. Yeah, it's like, no, this sucks. But then somehow we all come around to it, maybe because
Yes.
it's the only thing we're good at. I don't know,
It's
but
layered. There's layers to
yeah,
that.
there is for sure. But you grew up in a very kind of small, sort of isolated town. So that's Durango, Colorado, for anyone who's been there, really far in a little corner of Colorado. So tell us what it was like growing up in Durango and becoming this kind of phenom runner. You ended up becoming a runner up for Colorado State, which is a really competitive state for running.
Durango was a great place to grow up. In a way, it's similar to Boulder, where Maddie and I are now. But it's just a lot smaller. And endurance sports are really big in Durango. So mountain biking, skiing, running, trail running, like all of that is really huge down there, and people respect those kind of sports and like get it. So there's a lot of support behind things like that. And so yeah, jumping into cross country as like a young freshman and like finding some success with it and really starting to explore this whole new pathway that I'd never like considered was really cool. And the town like really got behind me, got behind our team. So it was just really cool. I think it was just like the community is so involved with high school sports in Durango, especially sports like skiing and running and biking. And so that made it really even more fun because you just kind of feel like everyone is rooting for you and cheering for you. And yeah, so Durango was it was a great place to grow up. And I don't know, even like my freshman and sophomore year, I'm getting better at it. I'm having more success. I'm winning more races. And at the end of my sophomore year, my high school coach was like, "What do you think about pursuing this collegiately?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he was like, "You are good enough. And if things keep progressing the way that they seem to be, like there are scholarship opportunities to run collegiately, like at, D2 and D1. Is that something you're interested in?" And I was like, I guess. Like I didn't even realize you could continue on after high school. Like I knew you could get scholarships in like other sports, but like again, like running was just still so foreign to me. I was like, oh yeah, it makes sense that there's like running teams like outside of just like the high school level. And so I started going to like college running camps. So like my junior year, I went to Western States running camp, and then my senior year, I went to Oregon's running camp. And I decided that summer that I was going to go to Oregon and like Tracktown USA. I
I
was
didn't
like
know
in
that.
it. Right? Fully in it at that point. I was like a Nike girl. My grandparents lived in Eugene, so we went to Eugene every summer. And so my junior year, we like toured the campus. We went to Nike, like Prefontaine. Like I had all the shirts with like the quotes, and like it was like this big thing. And I was like, this is the program that I want to go to. Like if I'm gonna do it, I want to do it at like the highest level. So I went to their running camp going into my senior year. And at the time, Vin Lanana was the head coach at Oregon. And he had us all together on the first day, sitting in the bleachers at Hayward Field. And he basically said something to the effect of, "We recruit greatness. And like, that is what this program is for. It's for people that like really have what it takes to be competitive at this next level." And he was like, "We recruit Foot Locker champions, we recruit state champions. Like, that's the caliber of athlete we want coming to Oregon." So I was like, done. I will win state. Like that is, I am coming here. So my whole senior year, like that whole cross country season, my one goal was to win a state title and then go to Oregon. I had a yellow Volkswagen Beetle and I got like the biggest yellow O that I could find at like the bookstore before I came home from running camp. And I like put it on my Volkswagen Bug. Like I was an Oregon girl. Like that's where I was going. So I have a great
I
cross
had no idea.
country. You didn't know this? Oh yeah. Dude, I was
No.
like, I was a duck at heart. I was like, this is
Wow.
where I'm going.
Okay.
And so I won every single race my senior year. I was undefeated. Went to the state meet. I got second. I got second by, I think, Ellie Rostel of Fort Collins. She beat me by, I think, like 3 or 4 seconds. So
Oh,
it was
no.
so close. I just like couldn't
Wow.
get her down. So I got second and I was like, that's still pretty good. Like, I didn't win, but like second at the
Yeah.
5A Colorado Cross Country Championships up in Colorado Springs. Like, that's a big deal. It was my highest finish. I was, I think, eighth the year before my junior year. And so second was huge. And to be runner up, I was like, that has to mean something. Never heard from Van Lanana. I
Oh,
reached out to them
devastating.
myself. I had my high school coach reach out to them,
Oh,
like crickets.
that's so hard.
But in the meantime, I was getting like recruited. I started to get recruited from a bunch of other programs, one of those being CU. And at the time, I was so singularly focused on Oregon, and their legacy that I hardly knew anything about Colorado's, which is kind of sad given that I lived in Colorado. And my dad, like, I remember telling him, like, hey, like Mark Wetmore reached out to me. He coaches at CU. And my dad was like, what? He was like, Mark Wetmore? I was like, yeah. And he was like, do you know like how legendary CU's program is? And I was like, no. So my dad had read Running with Buffaloes and obviously knew about the Gouchers and the Ritz and Hines and the Culpeppers and just like all the legends that had like come through that Mark had coached, all the national titles they had. And he was like, Laura, like, I know you want to go to Oregon because you want to challenge yourself at the highest level collegiately. He was like, this is like one of their rivals. Like, this is like one of the biggest programs in the country. Like, you should think about talking to Mark. So anyway, that is how that
Wow.
journey went. And yeah, ended up going to see you. So go Buffs. That's
Yeah.
a the hard thing was getting that yellow O off my car
I
after I
bet.
died. I had to take
So
like a razor
sticky.
blade and just slowly like chip it off my car. And then I
There's
put
no
it.
way that thing came off clean.
Dude, no, it did not come off clean. It was a journey.
Wow. Well, you made it in the end to college running, and despite some disappointment, I'm sure initially with Oregon, you did end up having a college career. And again, coming from a smaller town in Colorado, I'm curious what your relationship with food and running was then, or if you even had any idea that there was a connection between nutrition and running, or if that's something that you learned later.
Yeah, honestly, it was. I think I was really fortunate growing up. It truly was not something that I ever thought about. I always grew up having a great relationship with food. Like, obviously, my parents cooked dinner every night. My dad packed my lunches. Like, I loved to eat growing up, and it was, I always had a good relationship. I never struggled with that, even being a young girl who was highly competitive in running. I did have a teammate at the time. She was 2 years older than me, and I watched her really, really struggle with anorexia to the point where she had to be hospitalized. And so I think that was the only time in high school where I kind of had that moment of like, oh my God, like this is really prevalent. Like, people that I know that I'm really close to are struggling with this body image piece of running and wanting to be really light. And again, I feel very fortunate because I grew up not having to worry about that. And just kind of having the body that I did, I just like never really was confronted with that in high school. I saw her struggle, and I think that kind of like encouraged me to continue doing what I was doing. And I started to
Great.
understand like there is a line, and in order to be healthy and do what I am doing, I have to just keep eating because she stopped eating, and was exercising, 3 times a day and not having any type of caloric intake. And I saw what that did to her and how scary that got. And I knew I didn't want to go down that route. So I was like, well, what I'm doing is working. I didn't really have any injuries in high school. I had a stress reaction in my ankle, my senior year in track, but it was like so minor and we caught it so early that I only missed like a month of the season. So again, I was relatively healthy in high school. I had a great relationship all the way around. It wasn't until I got into college and was now at that level of the sport where I was confronted with those things a lot more.
Yeah. And this is a conversation that you and I have had quite often. So tell us about how college shifted your relationship with food. Kind of when did that start? What triggered that? And just kind of walk us through that progression.
Early in college, everything was going to plan. I came in, I was running really well. I had made the traveling team for cross country, so I was in the top nine. I was finishing like fourth and fifth on the team, so I was scoring, and like things were just kind of like the transition very early on. I was like, oh, I'm doing it. Like, I'm running a lot more. The intensity is a lot higher. Like, there were definitely things I was having to adjust to from high school. I was so low mileage in high school, which is also another piece of that as to why I don't think I was injured very often, is I was running like 20 miles a week in high school and doing like two very light workouts a week and then racing. And so I didn't really have an understanding of what training was until I got to college. And so that was the first transition piece of just adjusting to the intensity and the mileage. But early on, I was doing that pretty well and everything was kind of like clicking. And then I got injured. I got injured in the middle of my freshman cross country season, like right after Big 12s. I started to have really significant pain in my shin. And again, not really having been injured in high school, you just don't really have any understanding as to what that is. And I was like, oh, my calf's tight. Like, it's fine. I'll see the trainer, I'll ice it, it'll be fine. And then it got worse and worse and worse. And I couldn't run regionals. And then it finally got to a point where like I couldn't walk. So I got an MRI and I had like a grade 4 stress fracture in my tibia. And so that was my first significant injury where I couldn't be weight bearing. I was on crutches for 4 weeks, you know, then you're cross training for like another 4 or 5 before you even can think about returning to running. And so I had just never taken that much time off. And then not only are you taking time off, but you're in the dorms. And so, you know, coming from high school where my parents made my meals and everything was kind of like, you're getting what you're supposed to get. You know, like my parents had a good understanding as to like, you know, well-rounded meals and things like that. Well, at the dorms, like you're trying to figure that out for yourself. And I just didn't really know. Like, you want to eat kind of what you want to eat, which is fine. But like, I had no structure of like nutritional balance in any sense of the word. You're kind of just like trying to figure that out on your own. And because I wasn't running, like, I gained weight. And it was the first time I had probably gained a significant amount of weight in that span of just like dealing with the injury and not running and then, you know, being in the dorms and eating whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And then coming off of that injury. And then like at the same time, and you opened my eyes to this, like your body is changing. Like there's all these physiological things that I had no idea as a young woman are going on. So all of these things kind of started to layer all at once. And I eventually came off that injury, got going again, got another injury, and then I kind of fell into this injury cycle. And then your body's changing, and like you're just adapting to so many things your freshman year in college, especially at a Division I program. And it wasn't until my sophomore year where the women's team, for the first time in a very long time, did not make the national championships in cross country. That was a big deal. And then that was kind of when we started doing the DEXA scans, and body comp got started getting thrown around and body fat percentage and weight gain and all of these things kind of started to come into play as to why we fell short of this goal. And so that's kind of when things started to shift for me. And that's when nutrition became a really big centerpiece, but in a very negative way, because it was kind of like, you need to lose weight. And if you're leaner, you're going to be healthier. And then we're going to have more success. And so that's when that narrative really came into play for me, was my sophomore year in college.
Yeah, and I think, like you were saying earlier, body changes happen. They're supposed to happen. I think we're all ready for that change when we're like 13, 14, 15. We expect that. But there is usually another round of changes that happen when you're a freshman or a sophomore in college. So, like, 18, 19, 20, that we're not ready for. And it often happens when an athlete is injured and not training as much because their body has more resources for the changes to happen. And that's really scary. So, what did that feel like to you at the time when you didn't know that that was normal? How did that feel mentally?
Mentally, it was hard because your body feels different. And not only are you trying to come off your first injury, which I had never really done before, and you have very little guidance with what that is supposed to look like. And your goal is to just get back because the sport doesn't stop and the seasons don't stop. And, before you know it, you're trying to be ready for indoor. And so you just don't have time. And so you're just trying to rush everything. And my body felt different. And I knew that I had gained weight, and I knew that I felt a little awkward in my body and that there was change happening, but I didn't really know how to address that, or I didn't really understand why. So I was just doing the best that I could to like just get healthy. And at this point, and again, sophomore year is almost harder because you're not in the dorms anymore, or at least at CU, I wasn't. And now you're having to make your own meals. Well, I don't know. Like, my mom would send me recipes of things she thought I could make, but it's like you're grocery shopping and, you have classes all day and then you have practice at 4, and like just trying to figure out how to eat, I just didn't know. So, like, you're just eating what's easy, like pastas and peanut butter and jelly. And like, I would try and make eggs for breakfast. But then you're going long spans of not eating. And then you're binging at night because you're starving by the time you get home from practice. And then, you're stressed with school. So then I'm eating more sugar and like baked goods and ice cream and things that just like are comfort because you're stressed with all these other things you're trying to deal with. And then you're trying to get healthy. Then I was getting injured again. And so it was just like a really challenging cycle. And I knew I was in kind of this cycle. But again, I didn't have words or resources really to get help. You're just trying to kind of like do it yourself. And so then once we started to do the DEXA scans and then the body fat composition came into play, then that's when the conversation started happening of being like, okay, yep, like you've been injured a lot, you have gained weight. This is what we're going to do about it now. And the solution was to lean out and to lose weight and, to kind of find where that was for you. But again, there was no direction with really how to do that. We did have a nutritionist. I believe she was a nutritionist. I don't know if she was a dietitian, that we worked with my sophomore year once we started doing the DEXA scans and getting the body fat composition back. But like, you don't know how to get there. And so they're like, that's okay. We're going to have you work with a nutritionist. Like, they're going to guide you to how to get healthy and be at the weight you're supposed to be at. And so I saw this nutritionist, and her thing was like, well, it's all about like portion control and serving sizes. So she made it really clear that if you're trying to lose weight, which is what we were told we needed to do, that's how you do it. So I went through this period where I was like measuring out everything that I ate. So like a serving size of Wheat Thins is like 16. So you're like counting the Wheat Thins and like putting them into like a little baggie for lunch. And then it's like for dinner, it's like a serving size is a cup of pasta. So you're like measuring out a cup of pasta and like that's all you're eating. So I went from just kind of eating like whatever I wanted, however I was feeling, just kind of knowing I needed to eat, but again, just kind of doing like, this feels right today. I'm just going to do this. To it became this thing that I suddenly had to think about. And I never thought about food before. Then eating became this really stressful thing. And the relationship that I had had with it, which had up to this point been really positive, was suddenly very negative. And it was this really stressful thing that just got added in to all these other stressful things that you're trying to balance out and deal with. We had to keep food logs. It was just this thing where it was like one more piece of your life is being regulated, and you're feeling like you just don't have control over that. But all I knew now was like, okay, I need to lose weight. And so once that became the goal, then you suddenly are very aware of body image. and you're suddenly very aware of your teammates and who looks like what and who's having success, and is that because they look like that, and is that why I'm getting injured and I'm not having it because I don't look like that, and that's the goal now, is for me to look like that. Like, that was essentially the way I took the messaging, whether that's how it was intended or not. I took it as, you need to lean up, this is kind of how you're going to do it, and then once you get to this number, you're going to feel really great and you're going to have the success that, like, you're just not having right now.
That is such a hard thing to go through. And what I'm hearing is over the course of your college experience, food became this exhausting thing that took up so much mental energy. And then obviously, you're eating less, you're training more, physical energy goes away as well. How did that impact your mental health and your relationship with running as a whole?
It got really dark my sophomore year. Things just were not going well. I was on my, like, I think I was on my third or fourth stress fracture by the indoor season of my sophomore year. I was completely stressed out. Like, academically, I was stressed out because, like you said, you're not eating, or you're very, like, you're eating very restrictive. And so you just don't have energy to do all of the things that you're required to do as a student athlete. So my class, I was struggling in my classes. I was struggling to do homework. I was still trying to train at this very, very high level. I was injured again. I was really frustrated that I was just still in this cycle, but I thought I was doing all the things I was supposed to be doing. And so I got to a point where I called my parents, like, sobbing one night, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, I hate running. Like, I'm injured all the time. I haven't really had success since my freshman cross country season. I am just in this really dark space where, like, this isn't what I signed up for. Like, this can't be it. Like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And my parents really were really supportive, and they were like, you don't have to do it if you don't want to do it. Like, yes, you're on scholarship, but don't let that be the only reason you stay. You can walk away and continue your education and just be a student. Like, you don't have to do the running if the running is just too much. So I really thought about that, and I decided, no, I do want to do the running. I know I still love it. There were a lot of positives with being in the program at CU, and I knew I couldn't keep going the way that I was going. And so I finally was really open with one of the athletic trainers who I really trusted, who was a woman, and she was absolutely fantastic. And so she was really an integral part of kind of helping me take that step back, slowly start reversing all of the things I was doing from a dietary standpoint that were obviously unhealthy and not working. And it was almost like having her permission to not do that was enough for me to be like, okay, I can go back to the way I was doing it. And even if I don't ever run another step competitively, like, I'll at least be happier than where I am now. And hopefully I'll be healthier. Because she was the first person to kind of link that and be like, you're injured because you're not eating. Like, that's a piece of it. And not only is it because you're nutritionally in a deficit, but the stress levels are so incredibly high and your cortisol is so incredibly high that that is also what is playing into the fact that your body cannot recover and you're asking too much of it. So these are the things, like, step by step, that if you can start doing and slowly kind of, like, reorient yourself a little bit, it's going to get better. But this is how it gets better. And I don't know, had it not been for her and having that conversation, I probably would have stopped running. I was very, very close. But luckily I asked for help because my parents encouraged me to. They were like, there are people, it seems like there are resources for student athletes. Like, we had a sports psych who I started seeing at the time, Christy, my trainer. They were like, there's resources set up for you, like, before you make that decision, like, exhaust those and ask for help from people that you trust who are there, I think, to help student athletes. And so being encouraged to do that and then doing that and then being like, oh my God, okay, like, people, like, see me and see the struggle and are like, you don't have to do it this way. And having people be like, you don't have to do it this way was like the light bulb moment for me of like, okay, I need to establish a new relationship moving forward.
That's so powerful to have somebody who was such a light and a saving grace to you during that time. Because something that you said earlier really resonated with me, just in myself and runners that I work with. We are rule followers. Runners are some of the athletes with
I
the
love a
highest
rule.
GPAs. We love a good rule, right? Like, if you give us mileage, we're gonna hit it. If you tell us to run, we're gonna run. And it is what makes us good at the sport. But it also can set us up for self-detriment because we, to a fault, sometimes push through things that we shouldn't be, or we, ignore what our body's telling us because we're trying to listen to what somebody else is telling us to do. And it's so hard. It creates this like inner turmoil of, well, I'm supposed to be doing this, but I know it's not right. But if I don't do it, then I'm failing or I'm not following this rule. And having that, like what you said, permission from somebody just to give yourself a break is something that I know a lot of other runners can resonate with. Just needing, feeling like you need permission from someone else to do things differently. So I think a good takeaway from that story is you don't need permission. If you feel like something is wrong for you, if you feel like your mental and physical health is taking a hit, do what you did, reach out for help, open up. I know that wasn't easy to do, but I think it's a good, once you're out of it, it's easy to look back and say, like, oh yeah, of course I should have done that sooner. But when you're in that moment, it's so hard and you never know who's going to help pull you out of it. So, yeah, oh, not isolating yourself, not closing yourself off, reaching out when you're struggling, I think is huge. And I think something that's also hard and part of your story is that you had two conflicting messages coming from the athletic department as a whole. You have this message from this, nutritionist and some from the coaching staff, and then you have this message from the trainer, and they're different. And that's also really difficult to navigate within a program. And it's funny because you and I both have been through the CU program, and they didn't do that when I was there because they probably learned from when you were there that that's not the right way to do things. And I think it's again so hard when you're in that environment to feel like you have to follow the rules, but you are in charge of your own body and it might not be right for anyone. And the only way they're going to learn that is if people speak up. And it's, unfortunately, like you walked so I could run kind of thing. Like it's so hard to go through that. But the program changed as a result. And I think that's an important takeaway. You helped to change that because you didn't stick with it. And so I'm curious, how did you get out of that? What were the steps that you took to heal that relationship with food?
Yeah, I think the whole thing was hard because obviously as athletes and especially young athletes at that level, all you want is to perform and all you want is to be successful and you want to like prove that not only to yourself but like to your coaches who I really trusted and looked up to and like I wanted to be successful not only for myself but for them in the program. And so when you're getting messaging that this is how you do that, of course you're going to do that. And it took me so that's what took me so long was to trust myself and the point that I got to psychologically and physically before I was like, well, it's not working. And if it's not working, how much longer do I bang my head against the wall, even though this is how I'm interpreting what they want me to do, and I believe they wanted the best for me. And I truly do believe that they did. But that was just the messaging, and it just got tied in to weight and body fat percentage. And that was hard. And so when I finally trusted myself to ask for help and lean into the resources that were there for student athletes that I'm so incredibly grateful for, and I would encourage any young athlete to utilize, like they are there. You just have to ask for help, which, like you said, is so incredibly difficult. But once I did that, it opened up this door of like, okay, well, if I can do that to kind of get myself back on track physically and psychologically, then in order to maintain that space that I'm trying to get back to, I have to vocalize that to my coaches. And so I am really grateful to Mark. I asked him if I could have a meeting after practice in his office, and he invited me in and shut the door. And I basically was like, I need something different. I understand that you coach 40 other people and this isn't an individualized program, and you've obviously had success doing it the way that you're doing it. But I want to be successful here, and there's just things that I cannot do. I cannot run 85 miles a week. Like, I need to have cross training in there. I need to do less volume because of the intensity that we're doing. Because at that time at CU, we were working out 4 days a week. So, I mean, I'm counting long runs and medium, like MD days, medium distance long runs as
Those
workouts.
MD days were the death of me.
Dude, so many dark MD days at the res. Like, everyone's like, why do you hate the res? I'm like, you don't even know. Like, I have so many dark days out there at CU. So we were working out 4 days a week. So I was just like, with that intensity, like, I think I need less volume and I think I need to supplement. We had an Alter-G at the time, which was great. Oh my God, talk about a dark space. That was like literally a dark space. It was like the Alter-G was in, I was at CU before they had the Superdome and like the amazing facility that they have now. We had Balch Field House, which was where our indoor track was, but it was what, like a 4-lane, 200-meter flat indoor track. There were like potholes on various turns, but like it was just, oh, the Alter-G. We got an Alter-G, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But it was shoved in this little tiny closet at the back of Balch Field House. There's no lights in there, so the only lights were what was coming from the field house, and it was just in this tiny little room. So I spent a lot of time on the Alter-G, whether it was coming back from injuries or later my junior and senior year when I finally had this conversation with Mark. He was like, well, you can substitute some volume on the Alter-G and you can run like 2 or 3 days a week at like a lower percentage. Like, and then we can do 65 miles on the ground with like supplemental Alter-G mileage, and we'll just see how that goes. So that was the biggest thing, I think, was once you realize how to trust yourself and listen to yourself, ask for help, then I was like, okay, the next person I need to ask help from is Mark, because I do believe my coaches want me to be successful here. But if I don't communicate and let them know what I'm struggling with, then how can they help me? And Mark was willing to like meet me in the middle as far as what I was asking for. And so I didn't ever mention, I never talked about food with them again moving forward. That was something that I was like, I don't need them. They don't need to be in that part of my life. I'm a grown adult. I know what works for me. If I'm staying healthy and performing, they don't care. And it's just like, that was something Christy encouraged me, my trainer. She was like, this doesn't need to be a conversation with them. This is a conversation with me, with your sports psychologist. Like, there are other people where that is who you ask for help from with nutrition. It's not Mark and Heather. And I was like, okay. So once I had that boundary, that also really helped our relationship. And they never went there again. We stopped doing DEXA scans after like my junior year. That was something we didn't do my senior year. And that all kind of got like tabled. And I started running well. I had pretty successful junior and senior seasons at CU. Certainly didn't tick off all the goals I had set for myself as a young high school kid. My college career wasn't exactly what I had pictured it to be, but I was healthy and I got to race and I ran well and I learned a lot. So it kind of took all of that to pivot things and for me to get the most out of my collegiate career. So weirdly, I'm like very grateful for that experience. And it's not to say that since then I haven't struggled with body image and race weight and all the things that we like to throw around as athletes in comparison. But every time I kind of find myself sliding down that slope, I can go back to my college experience and kind of like recenter a little bit and be like, I certainly don't want to go down that pathway again. I learned too much to do that.
Such a powerful story of your college experience, and I think it's one that unfortunately more athletes than we think can relate to. And I think that kind of burning bright freshman year, the sophomore struggle, and then kind of coming back around is really common. And it's really easy to get stuck in that sophomore year place where you're under fueling, you're overtraining, you're staying in that injury cycle. And you did such a great job of advocating for yourself, having hard conversations, asking for help, that you were able to come out of that and ultimately go on to run professionally. So One last thing for college, Laura, looking back, what's something that you would tell her? What's a big piece of advice that you wish you had then that you know now?
Yeah, I think to just reiterate it, to trust yourself. And I think that's really hard to do when you're at that level and you're in a program like that. I think listening to how I was feeling and not ignoring that. And then I really struggled my sophomore year when all of this was going on, with comparing myself to my teammates and kind of like picking people out as far as like, well, I don't look like that. And that's, I need to look like that to have success. And then getting like really stuck in that way of thinking and then kind of spiraling. And that just like made everything worse. And not realizing that it doesn't matter what your body type is. Like, it truly does not matter. What matters is whatever you need to be healthy and to like be properly fueled to be able to train and race well at that level. But I just didn't have an under, because I was lucky. I just never struggled with that in high school. I think my high school experience was like rather insulating, where it was like a small team in a small town. You know, I was the best one on the team. I just like never, I was like, you know, I trained by myself or with the guys in high school. Like I just like never really struggled with that. Social media was non-existent in my day and age. And so college was my first experience with all of that. And it took me 2 years to really navigate that. So, yeah, asking for help, trusting yourself, and just realizing that you are your superpower and it doesn't have to look like anyone else. We all have our own strengths, and it's finding what those strengths are and then like focusing on that instead of what you feel like you're lacking.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And I think just a quick plug for dietitians, even if you think you have a great handle on food, like especially if you're going into a transitional period, having some extra support, someone to give you some knowledge, some skill sets so that you can navigate those environments is huge. And that's definitely something more available now than it was when you and I were going into college. But just a quick plug there for
Yeah.
dietitians for young runners. They can make a huge difference during transitional periods.
100%.
And speaking of transitional periods, you went on to become a pro runner for Saucony. What year are you now with Saucony as your sponsor?
I'm wrapping up my 10th year with Saucony. So I've been with them for a
Crazy.
decade, which is wild.
It's
Sometimes I'm
amazing.
like, is that real? But yeah, it's been an incredible ride. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah. And despite all of those struggles and challenges in college, you've been able to go on and have a 10 plus year pro career because you were able to work on, your health and your mental health, physical health. And so tell us what that transition was like, ultimately into marathons and how fueling shifted for you throughout from college into your marathon career.
I graduated from CU. I only did 4 years there. And I remember graduating being like, I am done with running, at least competing. You know, I had a really great last 2 years at CU, but I wasn't doing anything that would garner a sponsorship. And so at that point, I was like, well, if you're not coming out of college and signing a pro deal, you're done. And I also needed some time, I think, to reset. I was pretty burned out. I was frustrated with how my collegiate career ended. And I was just like, ugh, like that just like wasn't fully what I wanted it to be. So I took like 3 months off, was trying to figure out, as one does when they graduate from college, like, what do you do now? I was applying to grad school. I was applying to like random jobs in Boulder, just trying to figure out like what I needed to do to stay here. And I slowly started to run because I got the assistant coaching job at Monarch, just Miss Maddie. She graduated in 2011. I came in being like, I need to do something, and there's an open assistant position here. So I started running again to run with the girls and kind of got back into it. One of my good friends from CU and one of my teammates had just joined a local track club called Boulder Track Club. It was just starting. And he was like, I feel like you're like me, where you didn't fully get what you wanted out of your running career at CU. Like, there are a lot of ways you can continue doing that post-collegiately, even if you don't have like some big pro deal. And so I met with the coach, loved what he had to say, was kind of getting back into running anyway. And I was like, this could be my fresh new start. So I started running with Boulder Track Club, got back into training. I really liked Lee's philosophy. It was similar to CU's, but with like a little bit of a different intensity and like no pressure, because you can kind of pick your own races and compete when you want to and not when you don't want to. And kind of like you have more control outside the collegiate system. So I really liked that. And so I started competing in cross country, like club nationals, made a US team, got back on the track, slowly started lowering PRs. I was working full time at Runner's Roost, coaching at Monarch, paying to go to all these races and just, try and get opportunity to have that breakthrough. I finally had it in 2013. I was third at like this big US road championship. And then I went on to win the club cross country championships. And then in 2014, I signed with Saucony. And that's when like my real pro career really took off. Stayed on the track, did cross country, and then I slowly worked my way up to the marathon in 2015. That's a big shift because you're doing more volume. You have to race 26 miles, which I was like, well, that's impossible. I told me when I joined Boulder Track Club, I was like, I don't ever want to do the marathon. And he was like, okay, like you don't have to. And I was like, great. And then, fast forward 4 years, it's like I'm doing the marathon. But fueling is a big part of that. Not only in you have to fuel during the race because it's such a long race, you're out there for 2.5+ hours, but then your training volume increases, like the long runs especially, and learning how to fuel for those, and then learning to fuel after and how to recover. So fueling kind of came back into play. But again, in a really positive way, because Lee was like, you have to fuel to recover, and you have to fuel to be able to increase training demand. And then you have to fuel to be able to execute the 26-mile race. Like fueling was talked about very positively with the marathon. I think that was one of the first times outside of like first talking with you about it, about seeing food as a superpower and seeing food as a very crucial part of what we do as runners and what we need to be successful. That has to be at the forefront. And I just had never thought of it that way, even after my whole journey with it and like the shorter distances. Like, yeah, you're training hard, those are really high intensity races. But I just, and I was eating, and again, I was like back to having a healthy relationship with food. But I never actually had someone be like, it is how you fuel your body. Like, it is like gas to a car. Like, if you don't have it, you're gonna run out at some point and it's not gonna be good. And so having that was like another shift in my journey with it, where you're like, food is fuel. Like you have to have it. I have to eat more. Not only like do I have to learn how to eat during, but I have to learn how to eat and increase that outside of training. And so that was kind of that pivotal point.
Yeah, I think that's really cool that you made that mindset shift again. Even, I think highlighting here that healing your relationship with food and having a better relationship with food is huge, and that's one piece of the puzzle. But then taking that one step further and saying, okay, I have this good relationship with food, but now how do I use that to fuel myself? And the marathon is such a game of who can push their body to the brink in a training block and in a race the most without breaking. And the only way that you can do that consistently is if you are fueling properly. So, what did that mindset shift do for your performance when that clicked for you and you started fueling for performance instead of just, fueling to eat?
I really started, and again, like Lee would always call this like the one percenters. So he was like, you can't be successful, especially at the marathon, with training alone. It's everything you do outside of that. It's how you recover with like massage or like foam rolling or, mobility, getting in the gym and fuel. Like you have to eat to recover. And it's all part of training. Training isn't just what you do when you're running, it's your lifestyle and it's everything, like everything outside of that plays into what you do when you actually get out in the race. So that was really helpful because I just like never looked at eating as being part of training. It's like you eat because you're hungry, it's like a basic thing you have to have. But like as an athlete, I just like had never thought of it that way. And so the marathon was a big shift in how I started to view like food being part of my training and how important that was. And it's funny because, I went such a long way with that, and that's still kind of what I carry, at this point in my career, like 10 years into marathoning. But I remember 2 years ago when I was training for Chicago, I was coaching with Maddie, and I was doing this big Chicago marathon build, and I was just like not feeling good, and I was starting to just kind of like hit walls in training. I wasn't recovering, and I'm like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. What is wrong? So Maddie, to some extent, I don't remember exactly how the conversation played out, but you were basically like, well, walk me through like what you're eating. Like, what does a day look like? So I told you when you were like, no, like you have like that was the first time when you were like, you're unintentionally underfueling. You're like, you're going way too long between meals. It's not just about breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's everything in between that. You need to be eating every 2 to 3 hours, but it's not just like grabbing a handful of chips. It's like being intentional with what you're eating. So I was like, well, I had an apple. And you're like, great, have an apple and a cheese stick and some pretzels. Or, like it was just, again, like I was doing what I thought I needed to do with food and fueling my body. But I had just kind of like, I don't know if getting lazy with it is the right word, but it was like, and I think the hard thing with marathoning is you're doing so much volume and intensity. It was changing my appetite. And like ever since college and all of that, my big rule of thumb was like, eat when you're hungry. Like when you're hungry, you gotta eat. Like you can't like push that off. And I just wasn't getting hungry in my marathon build in this block for whatever reason. I just was losing my appetite and not really realizing it. So I was like, I'm eating. I'm not like withholding food. I'm not trying to restrict calories. But you were like, well, you're unintentionally not getting nearly enough. And so I was just like, I crossed over into that like almost like overtraining with lack of recovery because I just was eating significantly less than I needed to be eating because I wasn't hungry, but I didn't like put two and two together until you and I talked. And I was like, oh my God. So again, like
Totally.
another light bulb moment where you're like, holy shit, like I'm just like, I'm not trying to restrict and I'm not trying to like not do what I know is important for me to do as an athlete, but I just like, I wasn't being intentional with it. And so once you and I talked, I was like, you have to eat every 2 to 3 hours, whether you want to or not. And it's like finding things like you were like, smoothies can be really helpful. Like these are all the things you can put into smoothies to make them really high in calories, like just like yogurts, like just and then like protein and carbs. Like, and it's so funny because as a marathon runner, carbohydrates are king. But even again, like you opened my eyes to that where you were like, no, you need like whatever the percentage is, like most of what you're getting, like you need carbohydrates and you're also not getting enough of those. And you're like, well, but I eat pasta at night. And you're like, there's all these other ways that you can do it, which was like mind blowing.
Totally. And I think it's cool that you've had both experiences with that kind of intentional underfeeling and unintentional underfeeling, because a lot of athletes think, well, if I know what I should be doing, especially if I've been through something like what you went through in college, then I'm not going to be underfeeling because I am eating and I'm eating consistently. But it's really is those little things that add up that people don't think about, that maybe they don't realize until they talk to a dietitian or something, that somebody understands their needs for the sport and their training, where that light bulb can go off. And you can start to make those shifts. And you've had some incredible marathons. And I know fueling was a big part of that. So how did that feel when that fueling, that extra work with fueling paid off?
Yeah, it felt really good because you can feel that like distinctive shift in yourself when you're properly fueled and you're getting what you need. And also like during a long run, like it can be really hard to eat during a long run. You're out there for like 20 plus miles. You have to take in some type of nutrition. And it's really hard to like get the fluids down or get like the gels down or whatever it is you decide works for you. But I also learned the more frequently you can get fluids and nutrition down in a long run, the quicker it sets you up to recover for the next day. So like recovery starts during the long run, which was another wild concept that I didn't really understand fully until like later in my marathoning career, like how important that piece is. And playing around with all sorts of different things. Like if you can't get gels down, there's now, like electrolyte companies like Scratch and like Never Second are making these like carbohydrate like based drinks that you can get everything you need just drinking. You know, there's so many more options with gels. There's so many other things people can turn to, but that piece is important. It's not just about how you fuel outside of training, but the more you can be intentional and understand what your body needs and like the caloric demand while you're training, and then getting that in during the training run, it just sets you up to feel better the next day. And just like you don't have to skip a beat, you can just keep going. And that's how you sustain the volume with marathoning. The fueling starts during, it's like during and after, not just like what do you eat after a long run. It's like, well, what did you eat during and how much did you get in? Like thinking about it that way. Because I feel like one of my downfalls is just like I'm very simplistic and like I'm an old school runner where I'm just like, I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about the science. Like I just want to like go out there and run hard. But as I've gotten older and that becomes like even more important with how you recover, it's finding ways to be able to do that that doesn't feel overwhelming. And like that's where you were really helpful, where you're like, well, there's all these ways you can start to do that and you don't have to overthink it and it doesn't have to be really complicated, but thinking about it to a certain extent and knowing what you need can make a huge difference for you. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Totally. And it's so cool just to hear your transitions throughout different phases of fueling and just reflecting back on everything that you've learned and how incredible of a career you've had. You've had 2 5th place Olympic trial finishes, which is amazing. You've had, 4 world or major marathon appearances. You've run 2:25 in the marathon. You've accomplished so many incredible things. And I think your story is really just one of a lot of tenacity where you've overcome a lot of things. You've pushed through times of doubt and frustration and struggle and come out the other side. Just like what's one last piece of advice that you would give for any runners who are listening, just how to overcome these obstacles and, from something that drawn something from your experience?
I would say lean into your support system, and who you have in your support system matters. Because at some point in your career, you're going to hit a rough patch and it's going to get really hard. And you're going to have a lot of self-doubt and you're going to question what you're doing, if you can keep doing it. And you can't do it by yourself. I've tried to do it by myself, thinking that that's how you have to do it. But I have so many people in my life who love me and support me and just want to be there for me. And like we talked earlier, it can be really scary to ask people for help, but when you do, it's always amazing what can come from that. And so don't think you have to do this journey by yourself, because you do not have to do it by yourself. There are people that want to help you. Reach out to them.
That's such great advice because reflecting on your whole story, every pivotal moment in your story was when you did that, was when you leaned on people around you and reached out for help. So, really good advice. And thank you so much for sharing your whole story with us. It's been so fun to hear from you. I would love to end on a fun note where we do our rapid fire questions.
Boy, I'm always so bad at
No,
rapid fire because it's
no.
like you'll ask me and then like I literally my mind empties and I'm like, I don't know.
Don't worry, this is not like
Try.
who's your celebrity crush because I
Yeah,
was
I'm like,
asked
I
that
don't
one
know.
time
I
and I
just
was like,
panic.
I can't think of a single celebrity right now.
Okay.
No, these are nutrition related, so they
Okay,
should be a
perfect.
little easier.
Okay.
We're gonna start with what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Ooh, my go-to pre-run snack is usually an English muffin or bagel with peanut butter. I like to put like blueberries or like raspberries or strawberries on top.
Yum.
And then I always have coffee, always. And then I'm drinking like Scratch is like my go-to electrolyte right now. And so I'll have a glass of Scratch. So that's kind
Awesome.
of what gets me out the door.
Nailed it. Got those carbs
Yep.
in.
I was like, this is also a test for Maddie to be like, are you doing what I told you to do?
Passed. You passed
It
that test.
is
All right.
a
The second question is, what would you pick for your last meal?
I think I would pick, oh my God, that's so hard. Either breakfast, I'm a huge breakfast person, or like a burger and fries with a side of ranch, obviously.
Love that. Either one would be great. What is your favorite dessert?
Oh my God. I am usually like a chocolate person. So any type of baked good. I love Ben and Jerry's fish food. Or a bowl of cereal. I love cereal. If I
So
could like
good.
never eat anything again, I would just eat cereal because there's
What's
so
your
many.
cereal choice?
I'm all over the place, but I love Reese's Puffs, Lucky Charms. People make fun of me for this one, but I love Cracklin' Oat Bran. So good.
What even is that?
It's like the little
Cracklin'
like oat
oat?
squares, you know?
I don't,
Made
but
by
I mean,
Quaker.
Oh, the Quaker oat
Quaker oat
squares.
squares. So,
Yes,
sorry, yeah, not Cracklin' Oat Bran.
okay.
The Quaker oat squares.
Got
That
you.
love
Those are
those.
good. I love
Those are
those.
really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cereal all day.
Love it. That's a good one. What is your least favorite food?
I hate onions.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
They're in a lot of stuff.
They are. They're in everything.
I
How do you
feel like
avoid that?
it's hard. I feel like if they're in like a salsa and they're like diced really thinly, it's fine. But yeah, I do like onion rings though. It's weird. You could deep fry anything and
Interesting.
it. So I say that, then I'm like, I love onion rings. Just
Wow. Okay.
like raw onions. I
Got it.
hate raw onions.
No
So
onions unless they're deep fried in ring form. Got
yeah, they can get
it.
it and then I'll eat them.
Love it. If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Italy is what's coming to mind.
Love it.
I always want to go, or like Spain. Italy or
Oh,
Spain.
yeah.
No, France, all the baked goods and the cheeses. Oh my God, everywhere.
Just a foodie tour across Europe, it sounds
Yes,
like.
that
Yeah,
sounds like
I'll
good.
go with you.
Perfect. Love that for us.
What is your go-to lazy meal that you make when you don't feel like making anything?
Breakfast for dinner.
Love it. Brenner.
Yeah, I love Brenner. Like whip up some eggs, some pancakes or waffles, or just like eggs and like good sourdough toast or like
Oh,
hash
yeah.
browns.
Yeah.
So good.
A classic.
Also, my other lazy meal is Annie's mac and cheese white cheddar. I have a
Such a good
box of that
one.
in my cabinet at all times for that night when I'm like, no, I'm having mac and cheese. That is what I'm
Love
eating.
it. That's my favorite too. And last one, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink? And you have one with us today. What do we got
It's
there?
here. I love Starbucks. I'm that girl. I know. I just
Okay,
own
lean into it. Own
it.
it.
But I love a vanilla latte, or in the fall, big PSL pumpkin spice latte person. But usually
Yes.
throughout the year, my constant is a vanilla latte. That's like my go-to. Like I'm gonna treat myself.
Love that. Amazing. Well, Laura, thank you so much for sharing your incredible story with us. People can find you on Instagram and check out your story. And best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thanks, Mads. This was so fun.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast with our special guest, Laura Thweet. If you like to listen to Laura's story or learn more about her, you can follow her on Instagram at LTHWEATT at LTweet. And if you guys enjoyed today's episode and are enjoying the podcast overall, please consider sharing it with a friend who you think might also enjoy it, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. All of those things would really help me out. Next week's episode is going to be fun. I'm going to be answering questions submitted to me. So if you have a question that you would like answered on air, please head over to my website and go to the podcast tab to submit a question, or you can share a story that I also can share on air. You can also DM me on Instagram or send me an email, fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much, and I'll see you guys for the next Fueling Forward Friday.